Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to UFO Think Tank with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to UFO Think Tank with Alejandro Rojas. Thanks for being here. I love my intro music, I gotta say, by Kevin MacLeod. You can go find his website. Just put his name in Google, and he makes a lot of really cool music that he lets people use for free. And, you know, I think I'll use that theme when I get my TV show, except for you'll have some graphics of me running around, you know, jumping over stuff and rolling on the ground as I am out in the field investigating UFOs with some of my UFO buddies. One being Mr. Jesse Marcel Jr. This is a great show. I'm so excited to have him on because I've been looking forward to interviewing him for quite some time. Luckily, I get to talk to him occasionally. I was hosting his first website for his book, and now I'm doing it again. So putting all that together for him, and I'm happy to do it. And he is just the nicest guy you will ever meet. The first time I met him, he was speaking at a MUFON conference, went up and said hello. And he says, "Hey, let me buy you a beer." So, we went over to the bar and sat down, and a bunch of people started coming up, and we had a great time. So he's just a really wonderful person, and I'm excited to have him in Roswell. And if you are not aware of who this gentleman is, Jesse Marcel Sr. was the first intelligence officer on the scene at the famous Roswell crash in 1947 of the UFO, allegedly a craft from another planet, driven here by intelligent beings and crashing and militaries on the scene. He went and looked at this stuff. He was so amazed by what he had seen, he brought it home on his way to bring it into the office to his wife and child at home. Jesse Marcel Jr. was that child, and they got to look at it and feel it and touch it, and we'll have him describe what he saw. However, soon after, the cover-up started. You know, the material was taken, and Senior said, "You know what, we're not talking about this ever again." Luckily, many, many, many years later, he did begin talking about it, and he began saying, "You know, that weather balloon stuff that you saw me showing in photos was not what I had found. And what I had found was not of this planet." So we will be talking with Jesse Marcel Jr. on that, who himself is not riding on the coattails of his father. He is actually very well accomplished himself. He's done a tour or two over there in Iraq. He is in the Army himself, and he is a flight surgeon. So he's been out there saving lives. So he is an American hero in his own right. So I'm very excited to talk to him about all of this. Very cool dude. But before we do that, let us get into UFO news. Mostly provided by Examiner.com and the UFO Examiner for the National Examiner is Mr. Roger Marsh. So you can go to Examiner.com. It's a great site. Check it out. Lots of local news wherever you are. And then if you want to look at some of the national news, especially regarding UFOs, you're going to see this. And what Roger mostly does is go to the MUFON files. Remember, the Mutual UFO Network, all of their files, every single report submitted to MUFON is instantaneously put on the website. So the interface that you're looking at when you're looking at reports is the exact database that is being used to enter the report. So there's no filter there. You get to see everything that is being reported. So there is a lot of transparency there for any of the MUFON conspiracists out there. So you can take a look at this. And Roger Marsh is doing a good job on going through that database and posting these stories and doing some follow-up on the investigations that happen on these. Some of the cool stuff going on this month, or this last week, a lot of it. Texas UFO ring being seen. There was also a triangular-shaped object hovering over an Arizona desert in Minnesota. Witnesses saw a UFO eject a smaller object, perhaps some little probe, or perhaps it was something mundane, something that was not extraterrestrial, but mistaken identity still. Investigation pending. There's a sphere UFO seen in Roswell. Black triangle UFO seen in Texas and in New Jersey. In Colorado, my home state here, there are multiple witnesses of UFO dropping lights to the ground. Very interesting. Arizona has also seen a surge in reports. Let's see, what else is Mr. March here? That's what's been going on this week in MUFON reports. Some other interesting news. Colin Andrews posted a story. Colin Andrews, famous for crop circle research, but from the Las Vegas Sun, they're doing a movie called Men Who Stare at Goats, which is going to be a black comedy, unfortunately. But it's about a gentleman, very, very controversial gentleman, named John Alexander. Well, the story is going to be George Clooney, very loosely based on John Alexander. John Alexander, people get excited about because he was an intelligence officer who was tasked with exploring the use of psychokinesis and psychic abilities to enhance soldiers. And also, in his career, he's been known for as a proponent and researcher in non-lethal weapons. So he's done a lot of that, and that kind of scares people because it has a lot to do with that. You know, brain games and messing with people's heads, but especially when it becomes, you know, the psychic arena. In fact, the movie is called Men Who Stare at Goats because supposedly it's an incident where these guys are staring at goats trying to kill a goat psychically is what they were practicing doing. So John Alexander is not very excited about the movie. What's this got to do with UFOs? Well, John Alexander also does talks about UFOs and his belief that UFOs do in fact exist, that there is something flying around. However, he's controversial in this field because he is always of the belief that the government isn't hiding anything, that they're just not interested. In fact, he did a talk at the International UFO Congress called The Government is Telling the Truth. Interesting enough, he talks about the government not being interested in UFOs. They don't think there's a whole bunch going on. Nothing's being hidden. They haven't researched the subject. They're not interested in all of this stuff, and that's a pretty hard pill to swallow, I think most people believe, including myself. So that's what John Alexander does, and that's why this movie looks pretty interesting. Hopefully it's just, it's unfortunate they don't make a movie serious about the subject and that they're just making fun of it, but, you know, what can you do? And I should give an update as well on the Denver Ballot Initiative, because I like to plug this and talk about it. If you are a listener who lives in Denver, Colorado, and you are a registered voter in Denver County, you can help out my good buddy, Jeff Peckman, who's put together a ballot initiative to let Denver voters vote on creating a committee to look into extraterrestrial visitations and what effect that may have on Denver, Colorado. And his main point is to have this be a research group that shares what they find. And hopefully they, assuming, of course, this passes and Denver voters go for it, that they can bring in witnesses to talk to people like Jesse Marcel Jr., to talk about this subject so they can hopefully share this with the public. And his point is that, you know, this type of thing is going to get a lot of media attention if it goes through. Even if he gets his 4,000 signatures and this gets on the ballot, the whole world is going to be talking about what's going on, and it's going to bring the subject once again to the forefront. He definitely got a lot of news when he first started this a year ago, and he was on David Letterman even. Talking about it. Of course, that was largely in part due to a video that he shared with people, or at least a clip of a possible extraterrestrial peeking in on a couple of teenage twins. Actually, we don't know what he was looking at or if he was extraterrestrial, but just a very strange video. Anyhow, let us get started. I have my guests on the line. I've been neglecting the chat, so let me look what's going on there. Say hello to people, anybody in the chat or otherwise. Feel free to go to the chat to ask any questions, or you can go to call this number, 646-716-5373. Call in, ask your questions of our wonderful guest, and let's bring him on. I believe that we have him on the line. Jesse, are you there?
I am.
All right, great. Thank you for being here.
Oh, you bet.
So how are you doing? You're living out there in Montana, right?
Yeah, it's kind of cold and rainy right now, but we've had some good weather. We're waiting for spring.
Yeah, I hear you. It's cold and rainy here. We've had so much rain. Usually this time of year is hot and sunny. You know, we're supposedly one of the sunniest states, but just a lot of rain.
Yeah. Well, they call it weather.
Yep, exactly. So getting into it, one of the first things I would like to talk about is kind of, you know, I've never heard and I've been curious to ask you what your father was like. You know, what kind of person was he? What was his disposition like? What kind of person was he?
Well, he was a family man. He enjoyed doing things with mother and myself. He was a dedicated radio amateur, and always was working with his ham radio station. We did a lot of travel together with the family, and he didn't talk very much about his job, being the intelligence officer, but, you know, he's just a regular Joe. He's a great guy.
Uh-huh. Pretty mellow?
Yes, he was.
So kind of like you, just a mellow, great guy.
Thank you.
So did you do a lot of traveling? Did he get switched from base to base a lot?
Well, when we're stationed at Roswell, at the Roswell Army Airfield, we'd make trips back to Louisiana so we could visit his mother, and we'd go out to Salt Lake City to Utah and see the scenery out there, and didn't do a whole lot of he was stationed in Washington after we left Roswell, but that was after a couple of years. But we did some traveling. We did a lot of camping and hiking together. So, yeah, it was a fun thing.
So you spent most of your childhood in Roswell then?
Well, I was born in 36, and I lived in Louisiana during most of the war. And then when the war was over, my dad came home. That's when he was stationed in Roswell. And we were there for several years. And then after that, he was then stationed in Washington, D.C., not at the Pentagon, but he had an office in town itself.
Hmm. So his career progressed after the UFO incident.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's I was going through his OER reports, and they're all good. They were very excellent, actually, and the UFO thing did not hurt his career, that's for sure, nor did it hurt Colonel Blanchard's career either.
Right, and that's one thing that's really interesting, I think, and a lot of researchers have pointed out that if these guys made this humongous blunder in misinterpreting what they had found, why did they continue to progress up the ladder so well, and why did their careers, why wasn't there any sort of disciplinary action?
Yeah, there was no reprimand at all. As a matter of fact, he was a good soldier. He followed orders, and his OER reports reflect that.
Mm-hmm. So I guess let's start off with going around the timeline and how it all started and what you remember as a child. So I guess this all began for you. Did you know he was going out to look at something strange?
No, because he never really talked about his job. I'm not sure of the exact circumstances, but I do know that one evening, instead of coming home, I thought he was still at the airbase, but that's when he took the time off to go to the Foster Ranch, about 75 miles northwest of Roswell. But he didn't tell me that he was going out there. Maybe he told his mother, my mother, but he didn't tell me anything about that.
Mm-hmm. Were there any rumors around town at this time? Did you know about this, what had possibly happened?
No, actually, there's nothing written about the Roswell crash site at all until after this happened. I guess before that, there were some reports of strange things flying in our air spaces, like the Kenneth Arnold sightings at Mount Rainier in Washington. But I really didn't pay that much attention to it because I was too busy having fun. Summer I was having fun with bicycling with my friends and things like that. So I just didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I noticed with all the boys around, especially running around and having fun in the summer. That's one thing I remember. Summers were always so cool, especially as a little boy. I had two sisters who were just slightly younger than me, and they were always bored. But as boys, man, we were off and having adventures all summer long, playing with our buddies. It was always such an awesome time.
Oh, yeah. We had our Daisy Air rifles and plink cans with BB guns and things like that, bicycling and hiking in the desert area. No, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. So then you didn't find out about what was going on until your father came in with some interesting stuff to show you, I guess.
That was my first inkling that something was strange here, is when he woke myself and my mother up to come look and see what the debris looked like that he found out on that desert ranch.
Mm-hmm. There's a great movie out there, and the images of this whole incident and of you as a child and your mother and your father, and I can't get past thinking of your father looking like Kyle MacLachlan. But Paul David's movie, and if people aren't aware of this, I think, and I'd love to hear your opinions, it's just an excellent, excellent movie. It's one of my favorite UFO movies in this field, of course, next to some like Close Encounters and stuff. But it is a must-own for people who are interested in UFOs, and it was a Showtime movie about Roswell. You can still get it. I know at the Fate magazine site, I think you can buy the DVD, which is kind of hard to get a hold of. On Amazon, I think you can get a hold of a VHS, but you got to get this movie. It was about Roswell, and it went piece by piece from investigators and what they had said, and from things that your father, Jesse Marcel, had said. So I always have those images going through my head. And there are big actors. Kyle MacLachlan played Jesse Marcel. I know Charlie Sheen was in it. I can't remember some of the other big actors and actresses in that movie.
Yeah.
So did you...
I'm sorry.
What did you think of that movie?
Well, I think Paul did a good job. You know, he took some poetic license just to kind of make it more interesting.
Right.
But overall, it was good. I think he did a good job.
Yeah. So that when I think of it, I think of you as a little kid in the movie racing to the table and then looking over all of this material and Kyle MacLachlan's excitement and his big smile and showing you all this stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Is that how it was?
Well, you know, what it was, I guess a little difference of detail there, but instead of the material being on a kitchen table, as in the movie, it was on our kitchen floor. I mean, there's a minor difference there, but what my dad had done is he pre-positioned a lot of the debris on the kitchen floor before he got myself and my mother up to come look at it. And he woke us up. I don't know, what the heck is he doing waking me up at 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it was, to come look at a bunch of junk on the kitchen floor, you know. I got things to do more, so I didn't want to waste any time staying up.
Right. So then what did you think when you saw, what did you see, you know, when you walked in and you first took a look at this stuff?
Well, you know, my first thought was this is just a bunch of sheet metal and some beams of some sorts and some black plastic thing. And my dad was very excited. Now, what was all the excitement about? Then he said this is parts of a, what he called a flying saucer. And I was not quite sure what the connotation was, but judging by his excitement, I knew it must have been something very special because he would not have gotten us up at that hour of the morning to look at nothing. First thing he did is you look at this and tell me what you think about this. And first of all, look, see if there's any electronic components like vacuum tubes, resistors, condensers, or wires, which there wasn't because he already knew that because he had already put it out there. But he wanted me to satisfy my curiosity about that. And I looked at that and I said, well, this is strange stuff. It's a tin foil or whatever it was, very light, and I didn't try to bend it or tear it or things like other people did. And then I looked at it like feathers in the, you know, in your hand, there's this foil. And to my thought, the strangest thing was the beams that looked like resembled I-beams to me with some strange writing along the inner surface of this. And I thought first, wait, this is like hieroglyphics. Where did this come from? And no, it's not hieroglyphics either. I don't know what this is. Like geometric symbols and figures of some sorts. Very definite color of a purple, violet hue, a semi-reflective of light. And the beam I was looking at was about 12 to 18 inches long. And these are small figures imprinted or written along the inside surface of this. And that was the strangest thing that I'd seen.
Mm-hmm. So, and you can buy replicas of that beam now, right? Where do you get those?
Well, you know, I think Miller Johnson, I don't know if there's any out right now or not. Miller Johnson there in Albuquerque is one who fabricated these things. And he was very active. There's other I-beams, but not really the ones I recall. Miller Johnson in Albuquerque is one who really fabricated the most close ones, you know, the most accurate ones. And he's no longer manufacturing them.
Mm-hmm.
He gave me all the stuff to carry forward on it, but I just haven't done it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some of those reproductions, and they're really neat. I'd love to get a hold of one sometime.
Yeah. Got the dog working.
Uh-oh, you got a gut.
Yeah.
Yeah, no worries. Mine does that sometimes, too. They're just in charge of security back there.
Yeah, that's right. She's a little skipper key, and she's a cute little dog there, but she gets excited about things. Okay.
So how was your mom reacting?
Well, she's the typical housewife of the 1940s, you know, kind of clothed, you know, quiet and retiring, and I'm sure she had some thoughts about this, but we both agreed that it was something very strange, and, you know, she really didn't give me her opinion about this, but she realized that this was something special, especially those eye beams with the writing along them. And that was the strangest part of this whole thing.
Have people talked to you about their thoughts about those the writing on the beams? And I'm sure there's a lot of different theories.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of people trying to decipher these things, and what do they mean? What is their meaning? Some even compared them to crop circles. They asked me if they resemble some of the crop circles, which, you know, there was some of those in there that did look like some of the crop circles, but I don't know if there's ever anything, any definition or defining about these things. So I don't know. But they're just some strange markings on the inside surface of this I-beam. You might have said donut flush in zero gravity or something like that, but who knows what, what they said.
danger, hot.
Yeah.
Don't touch.
This looked like it came from the inside of the saucer or the craft or whatever it was. My theory is, and I may be totally wrong on this, but it looked like the foil and the material I saw was not really structurally sound, and I thought that it was sort of like they had an in-flight explosion and just blew out a whole bunch of the stuff outside, and that was a primary debris field, and just crashed to the ground out there. And apparently there was a larger craft, at least the main craft, I guess, some miles away, and people said that there were some bodies or alien crew members associated with that, but I have no knowledge of that except what I read about in the paper, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people talk about the site that your father had looked at possibly being a skip site where it hit first and threw out a lot of debris, and then the whole thing crashed somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's basically what I was thinking too.
Mm-hmm. Where have those shapes or those symbols, are they similar, or have they ever been found to be like the same symbols found in any other language or ancient symbols?
Well, some people say, well, it might have been like Sumerian or writing, an ancient writing like that, and maybe it was, you know. I have to say that there are some similarities there.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So in the movie, it shows that you actually, I think it was even Narad, or it showed that you had, your dad let you keep a shoebox of this material.
Well, again, that's part of the poetic license. This was actually Air Force property. I was privileged enough to look at it and see it, but don't keep. I did not keep any of it, because I guarantee you, had I done so, I would not have it now, because they'd have found out and not have surrendered it.
Yeah. How old were you at the time?
I was almost 11. That was in July. I was 11 in August.
Okay. And then, so how long were you able to look at it?
I think we looked at it for about 15 or 20 minutes and just kind of scratched our head over this. My dad was very excited, and I guess his excitement was catching. So I began to look at this something very unique, and he did say you probably never will see anything like this again. And he was right. So, again, we looked at it, and then we boxed it back up, and I helped him bring out to the car, which is the 1942 Buick convertible. And I think there's more of the debris inside the car that he did not bring in. So I only saw a very small part of it.
Mm-hmm. And since then, have you seen any material that's come close to that bar or any of the materials you saw?
Well, you know, I think the foil was more like a Mylar. As a matter of fact, Bill Burns on his UFO Hunters program had me and one of the guys who was still alive at that time look at various samples of aluminum or metal foil. And we did this separately, not knowing which piece we picked out, but we both picked out the same one as Mylar, at the Mylar. And the guy says, you know, this looks like it. It just gives me chills looking at that. I remember hearing him say that after we conducted our research there. But Mylar was closest to this. And, of course, we did not have Mylar at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty interesting. So do you feel now that material do you feel that it was manufactured by possibly humans?
Well, you know, it, I could not definitely say no, but since we did not have Mylar at that time, and Mylar was, didn't come out too much years later, and the writing, you know, did not look like any human-type writing to me. And I guess the features, you know, I did not really appreciate at that time because I didn't try to bend it or bend the material or fold it and see it unfold like other people did. I heard my dad say that you couldn't burn it, you couldn't fold it or make a permanent crease in it with a sledgehammer even because it would just bounce right back out again. And I don't think we have anything like that today.
Mm-hmm.
I remember distinctly telling that one of the men in his office took a 12-pound sledgehammer and tried to dent a much larger piece than I saw with a sledgehammer, and it would not make a permanent crease in it.
Wow.
And the foil was very thin, and, you know, sort of like foil on a gum wrapper, or like my dad said, on a cigarette wrapper there.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot make it deform permanently.
Later, you know, there were people who had talked about some of the experiments they did and some how they used this tape from a toy that had these weird symbols on it. Did anybody ever show you that stuff?
Professor Moore, who is the project manager for Mogul Bloom Project, said that he thought what I saw was the scotch tape, which is about an inch wide, that was used to affix aluminum foil to kite sticks for the Rowan radar target that was used in the Mogul Bloom array. And he thought, well, those are just flowers that he saw. But as a matter of fact, when I went to Socorro, Professor Moore got one of those kites, you know, those radar targets, and brought it by my motel room and explained to me, well, this is what you saw, isn't it? I said, no, sir, it's not what I saw. You know, my wife and kids saw it, too, in the, at the motel there. And I said, no, this is not it. First of all, it was not scotch tape that I saw. These figures were embossed along the inner surface of the foil, and these flower symbols that you're showing me are much larger than the symbols that were written on this I-beam piece, which is 3/8 in its greatest extent as far as the cross-sectional diameter there. And and also, you know, the tinfoil he showed me had paper backing to add structural rigidity, but the foil that I saw did not have any paper backing. It was metal on both sides, so to speak. So there's a lot of distinct differences there, but he said, well, no, I think you saw this. And I said, no, I didn't see that. So we agreed to disagree. But he's very nice about this.
That's good. That's interesting how people will do that. Well, they'll come and say, here's what you saw.
Yeah. And you know,
and,
well, it wasn't.
Right. And how would they know if they weren't there?
Yeah, really. And you know, I've seen radar targets, the Rowan radar targets before. And definitely that was not what my dad brought in that night. Because, as a matter of fact, he went to radar school, and he learned how the radar targets worked, you know, and he worked with them. And I guarantee you, he would not have brought a radar target home to show us at 1 o'clock in the morning. He just threw it in the local wastebasket. So this is not a radar target.
Yeah. So after you looked at the material.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I said they're saying that this is just a radar target confused with a flying saucer. How could you be so dumb to make a mistake like that? But that was a cover story. They
right.
needed to find something to cover up the real findings there at Roswell. And since a radar target had metal foil and it sticks and scotch tape, well, they said, well, this is what they saw. And, of course, it was not.
It's interesting how they've had to come up with a couple cover-up stories.
Yeah, well, you know, at first it was a weather balloon, then it was a Mogul balloon. But, you know, a balloon is a balloon. The only thing that was top secret about the Mogul balloon was not the materials it was made of, but the mission itself. You know, as you know, it was designed to go up into the stratosphere to detect sonic vibrations from any possible nuclear explosions from the Soviet Union at that time. So the mission was top secret, but the material itself was just off the shelf. Nothing unusual about that.
So after you looked at the material for about 15 minutes and then helped him put it back in the car, did he immediately leave or did he stay and then go back to work in the morning?
I'm not sure. You know, I just went to bed after that, so I'm not sure whether he left then or left the next morning before I got up even. So, but I do know he was gone for a while when he before he came back to the house.
A while as in hours or days?
Well, I think it was about a day or so. And my understanding is when he brought it to the air base to show Colonel Blanchard, who was the base commander, Colonel Blanchard ordered him to fly this material to General Ramey's office in Fort Worth under armed guard in a B-29. So we're not talking about a radar target here. You would not fly a radar target under armed guard in a B-29 to General Ramey's office. But Ramey, who was the 8th Air Force commander, should see this, and he would make a proper decision on what to do with this. And it was his decision to cover it up. And as a matter of fact, I've seen some pictures that Bon Johnson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram took of my dad on the floor in Ramey's office holding a radar target. But that was not what he brought home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you look on his face, he says, "You got to be kidding. This is not what I brought in. I brought over the space debris for the pictures, for the photo ops there." And the cover-up started right there under General Ramey.
It must have been a pretty frustrating moment for him.
Well, you know, he realized the significance of this, and since, again, we just finished fighting World War II and the Cold War was just beginning with the Soviet Union, and he was told not to talk about this anymore, that this was, you know, a, quote-unquote, a weather balloon that you saw, and, you know, sorry about that. So he just followed orders, and he went along with the cover-up.
So did when he came back home a couple days later, did he talk about it at all? Were you still excited? Did you go run over and ask him some questions about it or anything?
You know, and I guess the thing that happened at that time is he sat us down, my mother and myself down, and told us to never, ever talk about this again, like it never happened. Treat it as a non-event. Don't, under any circumstance, talk to your friends about this, which I didn't. So that was the only communication he gave to us about what this was. He said, just don't talk about it, period. And that's the way it was for years and years.
Mm-hmm. So in the movie, of course, he was really stressed out and agitated. And when he had told you and your mom this information, did he seem like that? Did he seem real frustrated? And did you recognize that he was upset at all?
No, you know, I don't recall that. Maybe he was, but it just was not in his personality to do that. So like I said, was a good soldier. He was ordered to convey the message not to talk about this, and that's what he did, dropped the subject, period. And I don't know that it made any major differences in his life. He carried on with his career in the Air Force for years later. And he did not get out till 50 or 51.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that added, of course, to the emotion and the excitement of the movie. But I could see, you know, in your father's perspective, you take it in and you allow, you know, your superiors to do what they think is best and you follow your orders because that's what you do. And so even though, you know, he's gonna look a little bad to the public because he had first said it was something that they're saying it wasn't.
So now it can be told what it really was as far as I'm concerned. But he just kept it close to his chest. Now, I don't know, I could not say it really adversely affected his psyche or anything like that. He was a patriot and a soldier, following orders, and that's the end of the story.
So, when was it, in the movie, again, you know, he showed, you know, the sense of when he was older, and because he was pretty much the main figure in the movie, and that he was real frustrated about the whole cover-up in his later years when he began to talk. Was that true? Was he frustrated about the situation?
No, I think that's just a human interest angle. As far as I could tell, it really did not adversely affect him. And that was just the movie just to make a good story better, which is okay.
Yeah. And it's still a great movie. Yeah, you can't, you know, have everybody be real ho-hum in the movie to have it exciting, I guess.
I guess the only thing that I could recall is that, he got out in 1950 or 51, and I heard him say, remark, you know, I've had enough of this. I'm getting out. And and that's when he resigned from the Air Force. So I'm not sure it was over that or whether he just wanted to go back home or whatever. But he did say, I've had enough of this. I'm getting out. And then he resigned.
I say that once in a while at work, too.
Yeah.
I think we all do. I've had enough of this. And then we're back the next morning after we've settled down.
Sleep once in a while and get back to it.
So when did he start talking and why?
Okay, you know, it wasn't until 1978. Stanton Friedman is one of the researchers, premier researcher in UFO cases. And as to hear Stan talk about it, he was in Baton Rouge. My dad was living in Houma at that time. Stanton Friedman was giving a lecture in Baton Rouge about UFOs. And it so happens that one of the gentlemen in the audience was a radio station operator who had known my dad about this, and he was a ham radio operator also. And apparently my dad had talked somewhat about the possible UFO in Roswell. So when Stanton finished his address, the radio man went up to the gentleman and he talked to Stan, says, you need to go talk to Jesse Marcel about this because he saw something very strange in Roswell some years ago. So Stanton drove down to Houma, which is about 90 miles down the road, and he looked my dad up and interviewed my dad, and that's where the story really got opened up there to daylight. So Stanton was the first one to really interview my dad about this.
Mm-hmm. And eventually, your father was interviewed as part of a documentary.
The movie.
I know. I've seen he was interviewed for. I've seen video of him talking about it.
Yeah, he was interviewed several times. He was not interviewed for the movie itself because he had died before that happened. But I do remember him being on, going out to Roswell at the behest of local TV stations in New Orleans. I think it's WDSU. But they flew him out to the site, to the crash site out there. And I remember talking to him about that. I said, I asked him jokingly, was there any of the debris left out there? And he said, oh, no, they vacuumed that up. And those were his exact words. They vacuumed it up. They want to make sure that none of this fell into the hands of a civilian. So we're not talking about a radar target.
Why do you think he started talking about it?
Well, 1978, enough time had gone by. So, I'm sure he thought to himself that it's time that people really know what's happening out there, and it doesn't involve national security to his way of thinking, and he felt it was time to divulge this secret. Let people know that we're not alone, that our skies are being visited occasionally by extraterrestrial craft.
So he knew about other sightings, official sightings and things like that?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think it really was a big part in his life, but he knew on that one event there that this came from outer space because it was not of human manufacture, but it was manufactured by some intelligent civilization from another star system.
So did you then have any conversations with him about this subject?
Not a whole lot because, in 1978 when he divulged the story to Stanton, I was no longer at home. As a matter of fact, I was up here in Helena practicing medicine. So I was not around really to talk about this before he opened it up himself.
Mm-hmm. So your history, you started, you went off, went to school. Did you join the Army immediately?
Well, what I did, when I finished my internship, I joined the Navy. And I spent about 10 years in the Navy. As a matter of fact, I went to specialty school at the Naval Hospital in San Diego for my specialty of otolaryngology. And I had an interesting career, too. I was on a board of ship for a while. Took part in the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was exciting.
Wow.
And then I got out in 71 and moved to Helena, Montana.
And started up a practice out there?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then, so how did you then get into the Army?
Well, you know, I wanted to keep up my military career some way or other. So one of the doctors here in Helena said, you know, why don't you join the National Guard and become a flight surgeon for the National Guard? You get a chance to fly helicopters, and by golly, that sounded too good to pass up. So I went ahead and joined the National Guard. They sent me down to Fort Drucker to flight surgeon school, where they sold us in helicopters, which is a great deal. Came back up here, and I got to do a lot of flying myself as the pilot of a helicopter. And so that kept. I finally retired in 1996 from the Guard after God only knows how many years. But then I got called back into service for the Iraqi War after that.
And so that's what you've been busy with this whole time.
So I finally fully retired from the Army in December of 2005.
Mm-hmm. Now, Edgar. Yep. Now, Edgar Mitchell talks about being from Roswell and having been from Roswell. A lot of people coming up to him, witnesses from Roswell, sharing their stories. Have you had that happen to you as well?
Oh yeah, I've had a lot of people, you know, confide their experiences with me, and you know, I think, you know, people see lights in the sky and. At night, and what does light in the sky mean? It may not mean anything at all, but on the other hand, it might. So I take it at face value. A lot of people I've talked with about this are determined to know that, or at least convinced that they saw a flying saucer, even though it was just a light in the sky. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who saw a daylight disc.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk to some people who had been involved or seen something in 1947 during that crash that wanted to share stuff with you?
No, I was completely out of the loop on that one.
Yeah. What about Edgar Mitchell? Did you know him at all?
Not in Roswell, but we got to be friends, and I was surprised to see that he was living in Roswell at the same time I was there. But no, I did not meet him at that time.
Yeah, that would have been interesting if you would have...
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's interesting, you know, that he's coming forward. What do you think about, then, the resurgence of the story? How did you feel when this Roswell started to become the big thing again in the late 70s, early 80s?
Well, you know, my dad was like he said, was interviewed quite a few times and made some trips out to Roswell. And when he died in 1986... Then they started coming to me because they knew I'd been in the periphery of this thing, too. And so I was pumped for any information I had about that. And since my dad started talking about that, I thought, well, then it's okay to talk about that. So that's when I started divulging what I know about the event.
Did you have a lot of people? I'm sure there are a lot of people who started hearing about Roswell because, of course, now practically every American knows about Roswell, and hearing the name Jesse Marcel, you must have had a lot of people coming to you saying, hey, what's this all about?
Yeah, you know, even in the Army, you know, I've had flag rank officers come up to me and ask me, what do you know about Roswell? You know, so I tell them, you know, all about that, and, you know, I did a lot of flying in Blackhawks in Iraq, and once we got away from hostile fire areas so we wouldn't be shot down, they would talk about Roswell and wonder, what did you know about that? So we'd go about this, the story again there. So it's a very famous story.
Mm-hmm. Would some of those guys in Iraq, especially the helicopter pilots, share some of their stories?
You know, they never did tell me about any personal experiences they had. But I guess, you know, one of the most unusual things I saw, you know, I'd never seen, you know, I got $3,500 on a helicopter, and I've never seen anything I really could not definitely identify, except on one occasion, we were flying back from Kirkuk into Balat, where I was stationed. And this was late at night. The helicopters did not have any running lights because it's all infrared, because you didn't want the bad guys to see it, to shoot at you. So we fly in the dark there. And I saw a light going from northern Iraq into Turkey, skimming along the surface of the desert floor. And I thought, what the heck is that? You know, everybody saw this, and they didn't know what it was because it was a visible light. All military aircraft had infrared lights that you could not see with the naked eye. And I knew it wasn't a civilian plane because that was a no-fly zone. Besides, who would be foolish enough to fly with a visible light on the plane in that area? So, but anyway, it's just a light in the sky. So what does that mean? Probably nothing. But it was very strange.
Yeah, that is really strange. That's kind of a neat sighting. Someone in the chat had asked about David Rudiak, I think was the investigator on this, who had looked at one of the photos with your father and Ramey, and Ramey's holding a letter.
Yeah.
So you're probably familiar with that.
Yeah.
What do you think about his work?
Well, you know, David is a real thorough investigator, and it just so happened that this telegram or memo, whatever it was, that General Ramey had was facing the camera, and Bon Johnson did a good job of focusing his camera because with computer enhancements, David was able to bring out some words on the letter, words like victims of the wreck and crash site 2 or whatever, you know, but there's words that would not be associated with a weather balloon or even a mogul balloon crash because there are no victims of that. There's no crew. But the letter definitely says victims of the wreck. And that must have been referring to the bodies that were found at crash site 2.
Yeah. Yeah, good buddy Dan from the chat room asked that question. So have you met David Rudiak?
Yes, I have. I've seen him at meetings on occasion. I don't go to meetings very often, but I occasionally do, and I've met a lot of interesting people, a lot of investigators.
Mm-hmm. And so have you got to spend some time talking with him about some of that stuff?
Oh, we exchanged email about it and kind of put our thoughts together on it, but I think David did a good job of computer enhancing that telegram. Because that's a smoking gun right there.
You probably also spent some time with Walter Haut, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he was the public relations officer who wrote the first press release that stunned the world. Well, he wrote both the press releases, the one that stunned the world and then the one that shut everything down. What did he share with you about his experiences?
Well, you know, I did not really know Walter when he was as a kid, even though they lived just a few houses down from us there in Roswell. But later, you know, after the story broke and at the UFO Museum and things like that, I talked to Walter there, and he confided a lot of what he knew about this with me. And you know, we all just kind of agreed, yeah, this is something that happened out there. And well, I respect Walter.
Yeah, and then he also had, you're probably aware, after he passed just a few years ago, that affidavit that was released after his passing, which was pretty controversial as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about that. I do know in the affidavit he said my dad saw the bodies. And, you know, I don't think my dad did, at least he never told me that he did. As a matter of fact, to me, a definite statement to my wife saying that he did not see the bodies, but he knew people who did see the bodies, so he knew they were there.
Mm-hmm.
But but I don't know that he physically saw the bodies themselves, but he knew of them.
Yeah, it was interesting because, especially for the audience, if you're not aware, in this affidavit that was released after his passing, Walter Haut had written that he. Your father and Walter, or Mr. Haut, had also seen the bodies, and that the skin was looked kind of like a snake skin, a reptilian type of skin on the bodies, and that he was part of an interesting meeting where they were talking about how to mislead the public and keep the public away from the second site where the most of the craft was in the body. So in order to keep the public away from the second site, they decided to write the press release on the first site.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was out of the loop there, but I know that Colonel Blanchard had ordered Walt Pound to go ahead and write an article for the local newspaper about the flying saucer that the U.S. that the Air Force had captured. And then, of course, when my dad got back from Fort Worth after General Ramey's wanting to cover this up, then Walter then retracted the story the next day or so. But that's what it is.
Yeah. Now my dog's going off. Someone asked in the chat room earlier, Tessa, because I refer to her, because sometimes she'll be backing in the or walking in the background and or barking in the background. But earlier it was your dog, so.
Yeah, that's right.
His dog.
Dogs, the place is going to the dogs there, so.
Yeah, exactly. What are some of the other types of research that you found pretty interesting that you've ran across?
Well, you know, I'm not really a researcher. I'm just an observer of that one event, and I've read about other accounts and stories put together by researchers like Stanton Freeman or Kevin Randall,
mm-hmm.
John Schmidt. I've read all their articles, and these are all, I think, trustworthy people. I know Stanton is certainly. He's very thorough in his investigation, and he makes sure that he has definite proof of something before he states it as fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I just know about
what
these gentlemen have come up with.
Yeah, Stanton, you know, if he's stating something as fact, that he's put in a lot of work. And it's wonderful about his books because it really teaches people how to be very, very rigorous and thorough.
Yeah, he's a thorough examiner. He's spent a lot of time at the National Archives and went through the records there, and you know, he's written a lot of very interesting books. You know, like Kevin Randall and Don Schmidt, they've written some very good books about this too. So, that's where I get my information from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've been now a part of a lot of different conferences too, going out and talking and meeting with some of these people.
Yeah,
what do you think of that? When you started doing that, what did you expect and did it meet your expectations?
Well, I know that I was invited to various meetings, you know, to discuss what I saw in Roswell, and so I gradually put together a little talk that I get to people, some PowerPoint pictures of various things that I think are of interest, like the universe itself and pictures of flying saucers that are definitely not faked, and just let people know what's really out there.
Mhm. And how are the people? Seem pretty receptive.
I've not had anybody who was real nasty about this or anything. They're all very receptive, and they respect my viewpoint. At least that's outwardly. I don't know what they think personally, but anyway, it's been very well received.
Yeah. Well, you might have speaking of people respecting your viewpoint, it's kind of funny and it's kind of fun. We have this gentleman named Pastor Pat who comes into our chats once in a while, and he writes about how this stuff is hogwash, and he just wrote Moon Men Are Hogwash, and people that do UFOs are drinking rum. What would you say to someone like that?
Well, you know, I think I tell them to stay tuned because sooner or later the truth will come out and you'll change your views on this thing. But that's okay. You know, I would be very skeptical about this thing too had I not seen what I saw in Roswell. I'd say, flying saucer with aliens. Yeah, tell me another one. But since I saw it, you know, seeing is believing. And, you know, I appreciate people's honest skepticism, and I just tell them that one of these days you'll find out.
Yeah.
Sooner than later.
Yeah. It's actually kind of fun to have someone like him around, and, you know, it keeps your perspective. yeah, people have a lot of different opinions, and right now he just said it again that rum is what makes people see UFOs.
Well, I'm sure that happens too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I'm sure he's right about that. But some of them, but not all of them.
Cool. It looks like Grant Cameron joined our chat, too. Hopefully he'll have a question. But I want to get back to the movie, because the movie had a lot of stuff. Of course, it had a lot about your dad, and it was kind of mainly about him. And the Charlie Sheen character then comes in, and he's kind of like this secret insider who knew everything that happened behind the scenes and let your dad in on what happened with the material he found and everything. And that guy was kind of representing the Don Schmidt and Kevin Randall and all the researchers and stuff they had figured out. And they talk about, you know, Majestic 12 and these creatures, you know, capturing one of these guys alive, and Forrestal, you know, really having a hard time with all of this stuff. What do you think of that research?
Well, you know, just what I've, all I know is what I read. I know that this MJ-12, you know, taken at face value, is a real icebreaker. I mean, that tells the way it is. I guess the problem is, can you prove MJ-12 is actually a genuine document? Stanton has worked very hard on this, and he's come up with some very convincing details saying, yes, it is. Convincing document. So, but you know, all I know, like I say, all I know is what to read about.
Yeah. Yeah. The movie, though, I thought it was pretty neat movie. What do you think of the movie overall? Do you think it was pretty?
Well, I think it's good. You know, there was some poetic license. You know, I guess one of the scenes showed my dad at a reunion with the 509th. Some years later, that didn't really happen, but that's okay. It just fills it out. That fills out the blank spaces there.
Yeah. Well, you were part of kind of the climax of the movie, where you and him have that conversation, where he's kind of coming to terms with everything that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that's all part of the movie, and that's okay. Just makes a good story better.
Mm-hmm. So and. The one aspect that kind of, it seems like you're dispelling is there was no hard feelings, major hard feelings that your dad had with the military. And it doesn't seem like you had any sort of misgivings with the military over this event.
You know, if he had hard feelings, he kept them to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And
you didn't.
Yeah, people ask, were you ever threatened or anything like that? And I said, no, I've never been threatened. I know some people said they were threatened, but I was not one of them.
Well, luckily, and one of the cool things coming up is Roswell Festival this year, where you're going to be one of the speakers, and I'm really excited about that.
We've
got a great... Yeah. How do you feel when you go back to Roswell?
Oh, I love it. You know, unfortunately, Roswell has changed a lot since I was a kid there. It's grown considerably, but, you know, I like to go out to where we live, the house there, and, you know, the courthouse square is the same as it was back in the 40s. They still have the same old cannon sitting out there in the courtyard there. You know, the UFO Museum is where the Plains Theater was. You know, I went to a lot of movies with that one. The outskirts of Roswell have changed, but right there in the middle of town really is about the same. And as a matter of fact, when drive west of the suburbs of Roswell, if you can call them suburbs, they're the same as they were back in the 40s. Not really changed.
Yeah.
When I went to the house, the vacant lot across the street is still vacant. And Johnny Pick lived one house down. His house is still there. Of course, Johnny's not, but I don't know what happened to him. You know, it brings back memories.
Yeah, good ones, luckily.
Yeah, very much so.
So did you visit some of the other local areas? Did you go out to White Sands occasionally? And
no, I have not. You know, I guess the only time Japanese crew from NHK TV in Tokyo flew me down to Roswell and interviewed me there, and we drove out to the ranch house where Bill Brazel, Mac Brazel's son, was still there, and he was drinking his Irish coffee in the morning, and he talked about his experiences, like picking up a piece of the debris, putting it in his saddlebags the next day, and he forgot about it. And then sometime later, and I'm not sure what the time frame is on this, but this is straight from his lips, saying that he got a little inebriated at a bar in Corona, New Mexico, and he talked to the guys out there saying, yeah, I have a piece of that wreckage too. And he said, a few days later, some people came knocking on his door wanting it. So they're keeping up with him. So the walls have ears.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
He said they made it known that they were going to get it no matter what, so he surrendered it without any questions.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so they're still, like you said, the walls still have ears out there.
Yeah. So, but he's a guy who's not making up stories there. He said he found a piece of it, kept in saddlebags for some time, then sometime later talked about it in a bar to just his friends, and then a few days later he said these guys were not in uniform, but they're well-dressed civilians, clothes, knocking on his ranch house door, saying, we need that property. You have Air Force property, and they're determined to get it. So, yes, sir, it's yours. Take it and go.
Well, luckily, like you said, you haven't had any threats, but have you had any officers, or are there, any other high-level type of official just kind of curious and wanting to talk to you?
Oh, yeah. On several occasions, I've had flag rank officer, general staff, talk about this, or know what I know about this, not on an official basis, of course, but just out of their own curiosity,
mm-hmm.
because they're friends of mine anyway. So, but we talked about that, and just out of curiosity, but again, not officially.
And how do you feel about that? Do you have any misgivings about that, or does it make you feel silly or strange at all?
No, I've gotten used to the idea. I think I'm privileged to know what's really there. It did make me very interested in astronomy and cosmology, because I realized that that our planet is not by itself, that there's others out there, other civilizations, and they're obviously more advanced than we are because they can get here from wherever they come from. And people say, well, what about your religion? Did it affect your religious beliefs? And I said, no, it did not. I'm a Roman Catholic, and it just made me realize how great the creative powers of God really is. And as a matter of fact, the Vatican came out with a statement about that some time ago, saying that it's okay, you can reconcile your beliefs with extraterrestrials and your faith in God. In other words, there's no conflict there. So the Vatican knows more than they're talking about. I think they know about it, too.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me why they would do that, because later in interviews, that same astronomer, Vatican astronomer, says, he doesn't believe they're visiting here now, but he does, believe that we don't need to have any problem believing that they are out there. And I'm always curious as to why he might have done that.
Well, I don't know. I think it might be, a slow drip of information being released to the public, getting us prepared for the big announcement whenever it comes.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel there is going to be a big announcement?
I think that sooner or later, I think there will be more and more information released, and people might just come to their own conclusion that, hey, yes, they really are out there. So there may not be this big announcement, but because people probably will come to their own conclusion about this based on the information that's being released. They might just come out and say, yes, we've been visited. We're not really in control of our skies, which is kind of frightening, but... But, it's kind of a really sticky thing to talk about for the girls.
Yeah, and I kind of think you're right. I kind of think that even is happening. More and more people all of the time coming to their own conclusions as they get more and more information. And it's interesting, I don't know if you have cable, to see all the documentaries coming out on cable about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. History Channel has a lot of information on it, as well as others. So I think it's being slowly divulged as we speak.
Yeah, especially the History Channel treats this stuff really well. I mean, it's amazing, and I think it was a Foo Fighters special they had on. That was the first special that had absolutely no debunking in it, because typically
right?
you have a lot of these guys coming out saying, oh, no, it was this or that. But this was just straight history about what people saw in World War II, and ever since, they've had a record of that.
Yeah, I think History Channel is more honest. You know, that, you know, if there's a honest disagreement there, they'll put that out, but I think that they're not just blinded skeptics. In other words, they'll come out and get both sides of the issue, and you can make up your own mind about this.
Yeah. History Channel, Fox News has actually treated it well. Good Morning America does. Larry King, of course. And you were on the Larry King special.
Yeah, he's a friendly guy. And I think he's sympathetic to the belief system that we have.
Mm-hmm. How was your Larry King experience?
Well, you know, it's okay. I just I got a coffee cup out of it. But no, he's he asked some good questions and met with some interesting people there. I think Stanton was there. Shermer from the Skeptical Magazine was there too. But that's okay. You need to have both sides of the issue there.
Yeah, you got cut in the middle of a raging debate there. So I know with either of those guys, it's already hard enough to get a word in edgewise, but when they were going at it.
So I'm just sitting there just watching the fray there. But Shermer has met his match with Stanton Friedman.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think Larry King had to at least once kind of tell them both, hey, I want to hear what Jesse has to say here.
Yeah, I have not seen it since that. I didn't keep a copy of it, but... So I'm not sure exactly what it looked like, but I was there just kind of give my 2 cents worth in this.
Well, luckily there's the beauty of YouTube, so if ever you want to see it again, I'm sure you can just YouTube it, and maybe that's something you can get on the site, some YouTube videos.
Yeah, I should do that.
Yeah, so what were some of the other media experiences that you had that were any of them interesting or shocking or anything noteworthy?
You know, one of the most interesting one was went to Washington and had a meeting with actually there was what program was that? We had satellite communication with Moscow, so we were talking with Russian Academy of Sciences people. And they talked about their experiences through an interpreter. As a matter of fact, the Russian ambassador was in the audience. And so I think that was the most interesting one I had. Mike Farrell, the guy from MASH, was there. He's a kind of MC, but that was quite interesting.
Yeah, that does sound kind of neat. It kind of reminds me of Dr. Strangelove a little bit.
Yeah, it does. But
remember that movie?
That was my favorite movie with Peter Sellers there. But anyway, the Russians have a lot of the same information that we do. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the governments of the world do, like the UK has. I think Germany, France, Belgium are on this thing too. But they're kind of waiting for the United States to make the big decision. But that may not happen for a while.
I don't know. A lot of people think that it's right around the corner, but a lot of people have thought it's been right around the corner for decades. So.
Yeah, and it may. You know, I'd like to see this happen before I die, but even if it doesn't, I'm happy with it. Happy with what.
Yeah.
I just like to.
Yeah,
I told you so.
Yeah, exactly. That would be nice. It's funny because, you know, some of the people who have been in this field for decades, when you ask the younger people, they think, oh, yeah, it's going to happen any moment now. When you ask the people who have been in this for decades, you know, they're like, well, I don't know. Get the same answer you had said, actually. I would like to see this in my lifetime, but I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah.
Because for decades, they were those young guys when they started in this field, thinking, oh, it's right around the corner, it's right around the corner. I know, like, I've talked with Dr. Leo Sprinkle and, like, John Schuessler, and especially... You know, in the Carter years, because Carter had a sighting, they thought, oh, we're here, it's definitely going to happen now. And, you know, all of these times that they thought it would happen, it didn't. and that time has passed by. And
yeah,
Dr. Sprinkle is kind of funny because he says, you know, now if it does happen during my lifetime, he's not as excited about it happening during his lifetime now, because all of the people that he would have wanted to go say, I told you so, have already passed away. So
yeah,
he said he would have to go back to his old university and go to the library and kind of look up in the air and say, I told you so.
Well, each time we get a new administration in Washington, they say, well, now they're going to spill the beans about this thing, but the new administration come and go, but they never, never do. So, you know, I hope it's not anything that we really don't want to know.
Yeah.
My personal feeling is that these visitors do not mean any harm to us, and I don't think they're malevolent, but maybe there's a lot about this that I don't know. So I don't know what the real reason for keeping it a secret is, but there must be something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and luckily, you know, it does seem like there are more scientists. Is there a change in the type of people that seem to approach you at all? Are there more officials or more scientists, at least from your perspective, that seem to be interested?
Oh, yes, certainly.
Yeah, so I think so too, and that's definitely a promising idea, you know. I think a lot of times with scientists, and, you know, you're a medical doctor, so I think it's similar, you're just so wrapped up, and, you know, those type of people are extremely busy and extremely focused, so you don't have a moment to kind of look into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like, you know, Alan Hynek was I think it was Project Blue Book, but that was to debunk this thing. But toward the end, Dr. Hynek realized that, hey, some of these really are real. You know, he was poking fun at him, like making some of his sightings being swamp gas, this, that, and there. But he always had an explanation for the event. But
mm-hmm.
Toward the end, though, he said, well, you know what? Some of those really were unexplainable. And you know, it's like Occam's razor. The simplest solution is the most accurate one. And if the simplest solution may be visitors from outer space.
Yeah, you know what? I completely agree with that. And that's one thing I like to say, and I heard someone else saying it recently too, is that really when you apply Occam's razor in many of these instances, especially with some of the instances that happened in 1947, even Kenneth Arnold, when you see these craft that are of extreme technology, applying Occam's razor would not be that it's some sort of strange weather phenomena. Applying Occam's razor to me would be that it's a technology from a civilization far superior than ours.
Yeah, because you can always find some explanation, you know, by jumping through a dozen hoops and things like that and twisting the findings to come to a conclusion that, yeah, it was just a cloud, you know, this, that, and the other. But in that case, the simple solution is that, yes, these are really UFOs, or at least flying objects from elsewhere. So that's why I look at that, too.
You know, I told you about that Pastor Pat who's in our chat room, and he says it over and over again, you know, rum, 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 put down the rum. If everybody who saw UFOs has drinking rum. He just said he's 81 years old, too, and he must be interested in sci-fi. He was talking about the Star Trek movie, but whenever he's in the room, I'm not a drinker, but I always get kind of a hankering for some rum.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I'm a morning guy myself, so that's okay. You know, people are welcome to their opinion. I don't care whether they believe it or not. You know, they just have their own feelings, and that's okay. It doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not mine to convince people that this happened. I just divulge a story, you know, talk about my experience, and they can take it or leave it and go with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Another guy in the chat, I was kind of catching up with what they're writing in here, see if there's some questions. And Pat's writing so much stuff, I'm having to scroll up and down. But someone did write about, you know, the debunkers, how every time something does happen, they say the government hires debunkers. But the debunkers make it definitely easy for people not to believe. And I've always thought that how easy it is in our world that, you know, when people listen to officials, that even if a UFO did land in the White House lawn and then it took off and lots of people saw it, if, you know, the White House's PR guy came out and said, nope, that wasn't a UFO, you guys are mistaken, didn't happen. Most people would believe him and say, okay.
Yeah, that's right. So that's okay, you know. But, you know, NASA conducted a study some years ago on what would happen, not if, but when people realize these are extraterrestrial craft. And about the only people who would really be disturbed by this would be the real fundamental religious people. But they're the only ones, because everybody else would say, yeah, I already know that. You know, look what we're doing. We're doing
right.
like that, too. So most people, a man on the street, would accept it as a fact.
Yeah. And maybe that serves to your point earlier as to why the Vatican astronomer was talking about it, and maybe because to help cushion that effect should that happen. I know you probably knew about Monsignor Balducci, who from Rome, who was a head demonologist, and he talked about all this stuff often.
Yeah, that's right. He's quite a man.
Yeah. Did you get to meet him at all?
No, I've just read some of his writings in the interviews.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. He passed away recently, too. But just an open-minded guy saying, yeah, they probably are here. Why would? He had an interesting thought, too, and maybe Pastor Pat will think this is interesting. He talked about how Catholicism and Christianity is very much completely based on witness testimony, on witness observations, on what they had seen and experienced and written down, and that's what the basis of the religion. And so if there are these thousands and millions of people seeing UFOs and all of these witnesses coming forward, we have to give their testimony some credence as well.
Yeah, with all the smoke, there's got to be some fire.
Yeah, exactly. So what do you think about, you had brought up, you know, other countries that are in the know, and, you know, Saturday, July 4th. Is it Saturday the 4th? Yeah, Saturday the 4th is the day you're talking, and some other great speakers coming on with you. That same day, Grant Cameron will be speaking, and Nick Pope from Britain. Also, this is a fun one. Travis Walton's going to be showing his movie, and he's going to be making some commentary about his movie.
Okay. Yeah.
And I know Paul David's going to be showing Roswell as well.
Okay. Well, it's going to be an interesting meeting, and looking forward to it. And I just hope my voice holds it. I have trouble with laryngitis now, so. I don't smoke. Never smoked a cigarette in my life, but I still have a real rough voice, and so I can't talk a whole long time before it just goes away on me. But it's going to be a good meeting. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, so that ought to be a lot of fun. But what do you think about all of these British files coming out?
Well, I think it's a slow release of information. It's just just more fuel to the fire.
Mm-hmm. Have you met Nick Pope?
I have. Yeah, I met him in maybe in Leeds, England. I'm not sure, but anyway, he's a very nice guy and a very reputable, very honest person.
Yeah. And for those who may not be aware, you probably aren't, because I've had him on the show before. But he worked for the Ministry of Defense investigating UFOs.
That's right. So, I think my phone battery is going out on here.
We've got a couple minutes. Did you? You know what was really something that really makes me laugh? Do you ever see that show, Futurama?
No, I don't think so.
It's by the guys who made The Simpsons, and it's a futuristic cartoon like that. And they did this episode called All's Well in Roswell.
Oh, is that right? No.
And it's really funny, and it was their idea of Roswell, and essentially they somehow accidentally went back in time and caused a bunch of ruckus in Roswell, and they were the cause of the whole Roswell incident. But you'll have to check that out sometime. It's really funny.
Yeah. So, I think my voice is about ready to go on me right now, but was there anything else?
Okay.
We need talked
about. I think we've talked about just about everything.
I think we covered most of
this. Yeah, well, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll see you in just a couple of weeks in Roswell.
Okay.
And
sure will.
And you have a lovely evening.
We'll do that. You too. Talk to you later. See you in Roswell. I'll see you in Denver.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're going to have the same flight, so I'll see you at see you at the airport.
Okay, we'll do that. Okay, Ellen. Good night.
Talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks. You bet. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. So as you heard, we're going to have an exciting Roswell lineup this year. It's been extremely busy. I actually have been putting that together with the city of Roswell. As you heard, Saturday is going to be an awesome lineup. I mean, to be able to watch the movie Fire in the Sky with Travis Walton, the subject of the movie, it's going to be incredible. Paul Davids will be showing the Showtime movie that we're referring to, Roswell, as well. Paul Davids is going to be out there showing movies all day long on Friday, so you'll be able to get him and talk with him. He's a really interesting guy, too. His father actually used to write speeches, and Grant Cameron probably can remember who he wrote them for, but I remember it was for one of the presidents. But it's going to be a really fun time, and we'll have Richard Dolan out there talking. Paula Harris is going to talk about Colonel Corso. You know what? Colonel Corso, why didn't I ask him about Colonel Corso? That's some interesting stuff. Colonel Corso, of course, being a very high-level official who says that he actually handled some of that Roswell material and that he had sent it out to various companies to develop technologies. And really, from everything I've seen, Paula was pretty much one of the closest people to Colonel Corso. She'll be talking about that. We'll have Clifford Stone, who I've had on the show before. We'll have director of MUFON. So it's going to be a great time. Hotel rooms are really booked up. And it's probably hard to get a hotel room, but there are camping spots. So you can do some camping, which might be the best way to do it anyways, because you'll be able to do some sky watching. I know Pastor Pat, I think, is going to be there. You're going to be there in Roswell, hopefully, Pastor Pat. He's actually, I think, a closet believer. A lot of people, when they're in denial, oh, Clinton, Paul Davids' father wrote for Clinton. Thank you. Thank you. But I think a lot of people are in denial when they get in kind of a state of denial and they're just so interested, they get themselves around these kind of people and they keep up on this stuff. And then, you know, when they're on the edge and they just, they don't want to believe, but, you know, inside they do want to believe. I think that's going on, what's going on with Pastor. So I think we'll see him in Roswell. And hopefully he'll have a sighting out there. Maybe we all will. And Pat will then be able to share some constructive stuff in the chat. And, you know, rum talk is never bad. I think there's a lot of people that like rum out there. But I think I might go find myself someplace that serves up some rum, because really the pastor has got me into thinking about rum. And I had a buddy, actually, whose dad gave him a couple bottles of rum, and they were really old, and they were super expensive. And one night, I think it was when we graduated from high school, he busted open that bottle, and that was some of the best alcohol I've ever had in my life. It was just delicious, and I don't drink alcohol, but every time I hear Pastor in here, I start thinking of that. Anyway, you guys have a wonderful week. Next week, I'll bring on another speaker from Roswell. The week after, I'm going to be in Roswell. And, you know, if I was speaking, maybe I'd have time to bring someone on, but I'm not. I'm putting the thing on, and so I'm going to be one busy fella. So I probably won't have a show week after next. But next week, I'll bring on another Roswell speaker. We'll talk more about Roswell. We'll have a fun time. I hope to see you all out there in Roswell. I look forward to meeting you out there in Roswell, Pastor Pat. Hope you enjoyed the show. You guys have a lovely evening.